in.
Sounds good. And I think we have everyone on. Check out that timing. Very good on timing. So I think it would be important to give everyone an update on where we are in relation to our larger meeting that we intend to have with a variety of customers in regards to the regionalization. Michelle or Ted, do you want to give us an update as to those that have responded, the total number, and our final date and time?
Michelle, I'm going to have to rely on you for the number of responses.
You're good. Hang tight here just a second.
While Michelle is getting that, we had an excellent meeting at the end of last, well, I guess it was on Tuesday, with the other members of our small micro group. And we actually put together, thanks to Amy Kaler, kind of an overview template of what we will be presenting. I think we learned a lot from the presentation that we did with our board, in that, you know, there we can quickly get into the weeds, and we called it going down a rabbit hole. And so we want to make sure that we keep the presentation at a higher level, but still hit on all of the elements that we've been discussing, because so many of them truly are just issues between the three utility boards, I should say. But we want to make sure that we cover those items so that everyone knows what we have been talking about. And our date is the 12th of December, correct, Ted?
The 16th of December, Sue.
16th of December, sorry. We have a lot of dates out there. And the time for the meeting?
8 a.m.
Okay. So Michelle will be providing anyone, well, I guess everyone on the board, with the dial-in information for the call, as well as emailing those individuals that RSVP. But I think we want to make sure all members of our board, because I would anticipate most will want to be part of it. Michelle, do you have our RSVPs yet?
I do. 26 that have accepted. I have a few staff that haven't accepted, so they don't really count. They'll probably be there anyway. Only one has declined, so.
Okay. And I think it was fairly easy for us to zero in on this date and time with the way that the responses came through. We wanted to ensure that we had leadership of the three major utilities and our mayor available. And so we did do a little bit of selection in regards to the individuals that all seemed to be available that we knew we would want. We can certainly make the information available after that, because we did talk about having it recorded. So if anyone on this call is unable to be there right at 8 o'clock, everything will be recorded and we can follow up as well. But our last meeting, it was strictly going over the agenda of what we would want to present, who would be presenting it, and kind of the flow of the meeting. So I don't have anything new really to report as far as details that we've covered or discussions regarding the financial aspect. Ted and Diane, am I missing anything? And Amy?
Sue, I would just offer that the purpose of this meeting is just simply to update the regional partners on the discussions that we have had. There's a lot of interest out there about what are you talking about. So we want to update them, let them know. I have been working, Jen and Melissa and I have talked two or three times about we're going to prepare a list of talking points for this board. We'll have those ready a week in advance of that 16th meeting so that if people are asking you, you know, what's the point of this meeting or what are we going to discuss or what are we trying to accomplish, that you'll have some answers there. But the bottom line is we want to provide them on an update. We want to provide them an update on what we have been discussing and kind of where we are. Let them know that, you know, no decisions have been made. We're trying to develop a framework that addresses some of the questions that they had shared in January, I guess it was. And then there will be opportunity to, at some point here in the first quarter, we hope to share a revised framework after our board has seen it and understands it and is okay with it, share a revised framework for their consideration. So that's kind of where we're headed, generally speaking.
Are there any specific questions from anyone on the board? I know we covered an awful lot of information when we last met and talked about this topic, but anything that we can help you with or provide guidance or kind of more detail on that you're interested in?
You know, Sue, we did talk at the last meeting about specifically covering the growth pays for growth versus benefit pays for benefit at this meeting. So we're definitely going to spend some time there.
If there aren't any questions, I think we're ready for that then, Ted.
If you would allow me, Sue, I guess I'd like to start by just trying to provide a little context for today's discussion to make sure we're all in the same place. And I know that everyone is familiar, but I just think it helps from a contextual perspective to start with the term sheet that this board issued all the way back in September of 2019. Basically, we presented a framework within which we believed a regional authority could be constructed. It was very high level overview. We presented in September. We didn't get a lot of immediate feedback until we met with the group in January and let them know that, you know, we're waiting for you to respond to our framework or our term sheet or our proposal, if you will. In February, they assembled a list of questions that they had about the term sheet, the terms within the term sheet. And then, of course, the pandemic came and kind of slowed everything down. But in July of this year, we started meeting. The three board-managed utilities started meeting to discuss those questions. And we've met a number of times, almost a dozen times. But I would say this, that all of that discussion, all the discussion that we've had at all those meetings, fits really into two categories. And one category is topics related to asset transfer and how that will work and be structured and the technical aspects of that. So asset transfer. And the other category, the other bucket is counter proposals, if you will. They're counter to our initial proposals. And so if you look at it that way, I think it divides the discussions up pretty evenly. And we're doing a lot of work on the asset transfer questions. There's a lot of detail there. We got into a bunch of that the last time we met, maybe too much. We were down in the weeds pretty deep related to depreciation and bonding and allocation of costs and all of that. But suffice it to say that we're working on all of that. And we don't have an idea yet exactly, you know, how many cents per thousand gallons of difference any of those things make, but we're working on it. As recently as yesterday, we met with the Iowa Finance Authority to understand how bonds could be transferred or how they couldn't and those kind of things. But we're working on those. There's a lot of weeds there. Those things just need to play themselves out, and we'll bring that back to the board when we have answers. But more importantly, and the things that I think we want to talk about today are the counter proposals that have been made during these discussions. And those include some fairly simple things like they believe there should be a third party fiduciary who's involved in evaluating all the costs and helping with rate setting and that kind of thing. And that's you know, that's okay. It's not a big cost thing. It's something that I think we can consider fairly easily. But there are other things that do have an impact on the bottom line cost and are important for our board to hear and understand and possibly even weigh in on. And this growth pays for growth is one of those things. And so what I'm hopeful we can do today here is, first of all, create some awareness on our board that there has been a counter proposal to our growth proposal. Share with you what that proposal was so that you understand that proposal. We do not have details yet in terms of, okay, how many pennies or nickels or dimes per thousand gallons difference does it make, or does it make any difference? We don't have that yet, and so we can't share that. So we're not looking for a vote or an approval or anything like that. We want to create awareness and educate you on what that proposal is, and then if you have any feedback perspective, you can share that. And I think that's my goal here, Sue, is just to kind of get that kind of feedback. So with that as the game plan, I'd be happy to share that proposal unless there are questions or comments before we get into that.
Ted, this is Diane, and I just had one question. We had agreed with Urbandale and West Des Moines in this micro group that we have that those discussions would be held confidential until, you know, we had a package to present. So this is counter proposal that, as you said, we discussed in that small group. Are we comfortable sharing that in a public forum?
You know, Diane, I guess I will offer you my opinion and for the discussion, but I'm comfortable sharing just conceptually what the growth for pays for growth concept is. We certainly, there haven't been any discussions about what the percentage needs to be or that kind of thing. And so I guess I thought it would be appropriate to share with the board just conceptually what that even means. What is benefit pays for benefit? What does that even mean? And if I get to the point where it's too deep in the weeds, you know.
Yeah, and I know that it was a counter proposal that was previously put forward by some groups. We have some more details on that we've discussed, and I don't know if you plan to discuss those, but I thought I would raise it because I certainly don't want to do anything at this point in time that's going to create any issues with that small group. I guess I'll ask Sue how she feels about it.
I think as a concept, you know, it's fine because what this group, what our board does know is that we did receive pushback from a number of groups when we went out with our original term sheet. And part of the pushback was, and I remember David Jones, who is the Ankeny city manager, saying, I don't care if there is a decimal point in front of it. I think everyone needs to pay something toward growth. And so it was a kind of a common theme that we have heard from a lot of the regional customers that it may not have to be equal or balanced or whatever, but there should be a little bit of skin in the game from everyone on growth. And then the issue also came up regarding Des Moines' push for greater density on housing. So, you know, as long as we keep it as a general concept, Ted, I think we're fine too. But Diane, I'm glad you brought that up because we can certainly go into closed session at any time to share all of the details with the board because we certainly have told them that we will do that. But if we do get going too deep, I think we'll just raise our hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to be sensitive to that before we get into it, because we are balancing those things. And it's not that I don't want to go into that detail with this board. It's just that I want to respect the agreement that we made.
Understood. Let me share a couple of general concepts, and then we can talk some more. But let's start with our original proposal, or the terms in the term sheet that we had issued. You know, there was very specifically a term in there related to growth-related costs. And basically what it said was that the cost of expanding production capacity would be shared based on forecast demand. And so what that means is that if your demand is forecast to increase and we have to build additional capacity, you as an entity, a community, are going to pay that cost. Growth is going to pay for growth. Fairly simple, straightforward. I think everyone understood what we were saying. But as an example, if we decided to expand the Sailorville treatment plant by 10 million gallons per day and that cost $70 million, then the communities that were experiencing growth, Ankeny, West Des Moines, Waukee, and others, would share that $70 million cost proportionately based on their projected growth. And communities that were not expecting to need to see growth in their demand, like Des Moines, would not share in that cost. That was our proposal, that growth pays for growth. The counter proposal that we have received basically says that inherent in any expansion of a system is some amount of benefit to all. And that benefit comes in the form of redundancy and reliability and new technologies that tend to be more efficient or cost effective, or maybe even produce a higher quality of water. And so there is inherently benefit to everyone to having a larger, stronger system. And because of that inherent benefit, there should be some amount of sharing of cost. And understandably, the communities that are growing would pay far and away the larger share of that. But everyone should pay a little something, because everyone is truly benefiting from the newer facilities that require less maintenance, that provide reliability and redundancy, that are likely more efficient. You know, we all benefit from that in terms of, you know, the costs all go into one bucket and the rates are all the same. So there should be some shared cost. There is a little bit more detail to the proposal in terms of what kinds of things would be subject to those costs, and maybe that is something we could reserve for another day. But generally speaking, our proposal was very clear that if we expand capacity, the growing communities pay. The counter proposal, which does not include any specific percentages or shares, just conceptually says that there's inherent benefit to all, and so all should pay a small, or some percent, it doesn't say small, should pay a percentage. So want to make the board aware that we received that counter proposal, kind of what that proposal was, and happy to hear any reaction to that or questions or comments about that.
Ted, how would you say we do it today in allocating costs?
You know, today, we historically, most recently, as an example, we have sold purchase capacity. And when we sold purchase capacity, we used those dollars to build the new capacity. And those dollars primarily came from the wholesale customers. But let me add that when we built the McMullen facility, Des Moines Water Works provided the land at no cost to our regional partners. Des Moines Water Works built the transmission, the water mains, at no cost to our regional partners. We used the proceeds from the purchase capacity sale to specifically build the wells, the treatment plant, and you know, the sludge lagoons and those things, what I would consider source and treatment. But we provided some amount of resource in that case. When the Sailorville plant was constructed, I think we paid for more of that facility with the proceeds from purchase capacity sale, okay? We didn't own that property. We had to purchase the property. There was some transmission involved, but I think that was constructed with the purchase capacity funds. And I see Peggy is on. Peggy, do you know for sure whether I'm right or wrong there?
We did not pay anything, and including, although we had to purchase the land, we reimbursed ourselves from the project cost. That was all included as part of the plant construction cost, in essence.
For the Sailorville plant?
Correct.
And did I get it right on the McMullen plant that we provided the property without reimbursement to ourselves and we built the transmission?
That is correct.
So it's been a little bit of a hybrid, Diane.
You know, another example, Ted, that might help on a somewhat smaller scale is the Microsoft deal with West Des Moines to build that ASR. Mm-hmm. How did that deal? How was that deal structured?
Well, another good example, Graham. Initially, we had an agreement with West Des Moines that they would pay the entire cost of that facility, but later in design and construction, we added some functionality there. And what we did specifically was we made that into two rooms because we wanted to separate the chemicals. We paid some of that cost. We paid the additional cost there because it was something that we wanted. It was after we had signed the agreement. So the initial agreement was they pay. Ultimately, we ended up paying a little bit of the cost.
But we did that because it also benefited us a little bit to do it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Okay. That is a great point, Graham. And can you tell us specifically, Ted, how we benefited, just so we will know that?
Yeah, absolutely. Sue, we are responsible for operation and maintenance of that facility. And we had learned from the LP Moon ASR facility that having the chemicals in the same room with the electric and pumping equipment created a lot of issues, primarily corrosion issues. We have very corrosive chemicals in hypo and whatnot that we use in the ASR recovery process. And so those corrosive chemicals have created issues from an operation and maintenance perspective, and we wanted to limit those issues. So we separated them out into a second room. We added some additional chemicals there for operational efficiency, I would say. We added CO2 feed there so that we could adjust the pH. And it's kind of a complicated story, but the bottom line is it made it easier for us to do the operation and maintenance of the facility. And we thought it was worth that additional cost to have that improved operational efficiency.
Thank you.
I'm going to be interested to see how this negotiating point plays out. You know, it's one of these things that I think has become a hot point, and so we have to be sensitive to it. And it's important. It'll be important for regionalization if we go forward that it is spelled out from day one how these things are paid for. I don't mean to diminish it. I understand why there's some focus on this, but the truth, I think what we have to remember at Des Moines is that those who benefit need to pay accordingly for these things. I'm not drawing a strong line in the sand that we can't find a compromise here. I just think we have to be very careful. I think in all the examples you've given of what we've done in the past, we've always participated in paying for growth. And I would argue that we've participated at a higher level than we benefited in some of these cases. But proceed with caution, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think that's good advice, Graham. And I will remind the board that Jason has been pretty adamant with us, Jason Mum of FCS, been pretty adamant with us that this is a very sensitive lever for Des Moines. And we just need to be aware that if we do agree that, you know, there's some amount of benefit to us and we should pay for it, that it can get expensive fast. So we're very aware of that. And while I would tend to agree that there is some amount of benefit to everyone from redundancy and reliability and efficiency and whatnot, it's hard to put a dollar value on that. And we just need to be sure that whatever we do is fair to our customers.
And I guess the thing that, you know, with all these deals that you struggle with is it's hard for us to anticipate what those future deals are going to be, right? I mean, before there was a Microsoft and there was a need for that ASR, we wouldn't have come up with that scenario in particular. And so, yes, we have to spell out some of these things, but truthfully, we're not going to anticipate how this future growth materializes. Is it just in housing and in the western part or a particular part of the county, or is it that big user of water all of a sudden that none of us in an industry that none of us have contemplated yet? And we don't know that.
Graham, that's exactly right, because look at the whole ethanol thing. You know, a huge user of water, which, you know, originally wasn't that going to go out on Vandalia Road, and we were all thinking this is wonderful. And, you know, Microsoft is another example. Thought it would be a huge user of water. And it's not the kind of user that you really want, you know.
Right. I mean,
you know, I shouldn't say not the kind you wouldn't want, but certainly in spurts, it's not a consistent, you know, number of gallons a day.
You know, and that's exactly my point, Sue. I mean, you might get a huge user that moves into a city and the city wants that industry to move in. Truth of the matter is it produces a very small number of jobs, and those people all live in that city, and the impact on the rest of us is zero. I mean, it's negligible, but we can't anticipate that. And I don't want to harp on that, because my I don't want you to forget my point. My point is I understand that these other parties are sensitive about this, and I think we should hear them out, but also we need to be very strong in our point that we can't settle our ratepayers with growth in other parts of the counties unfairly.
I would just add to that, I don't know how important it is, but it's something that I'm tossing over in my mind here, is maybe it's philosophical, maybe it's not, but where it's not only about water production, it's also us helping to pay for their economic development to a point, right? Like, we're helping to allow your community to grow in tax base and all of that. So it's more than just that $70 million plan or the whatever improvement. You're going to be benefiting beyond that water access. And how would Des Moines benefit, or in what scenario would be similar to where we would have the similar impact and you would help us? I'm not seeing how that could be a reciprocal scenario. I'm not saying that there couldn't be, but I can't think of one right now. And I don't know if I'm getting philosophical and thinking beyond that, or and if it's something we should take into consideration, but I want to throw it out there that we're not just talking about the project, more than that.
Absolutely, Andrea. Thanks for saying that. You're right on target.
Yeah. I agree with you, Andrea. I was thinking along the same lines that you articulated, but you did a better job than I was doing in getting it fashioned.
I agree, Andrea. Well said. We can't be subsidizing and encouraging sprawl and flight from the city through this effort. So I think that's important. Ted, I wanted to ask a question, and without, I'll try to say general without forcing you to, you know, disclose too much of the conversations you've had with our partners. So when they talk about benefit pays for benefit, do you think there's appetite for some kind of system in that where it's not every community pays equally? Maybe the communities that are, the idea is that the community where the growth is happening will pay more. The other communities might pay some small or token amount. I mean, it's not a, not even equal, but not a proportionate share. I mean, it would be weighted in any case toward the community experiencing the growth, correct?
Absolutely, Joel. I would stop short of saying token amount, but I think that the understanding, even in the benefit pays for benefit proposal, is that the communities who are growing benefit substantially more than the communities that are not. And so, you know, we're not talking about everyone shares the cost of a new treatment plant equally based on picket, their population, or their usage. We're talking about the communities that grow are going to share the majority of the cost based on their need for additional capacity, and then a minority of the cost, you know, picket. I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but let's just say 10% of the total would then be shared by everyone in the metro, so that Des Moines might see 4% of the total. And the communities that are growing would share the other 90% between themselves. That's what we're talking about conceptually, is that there is percentage benefit to everyone, but the majority of the benefit clearly goes to those communities that are growing, and they need to pay the lion's share of that cost. There is just, I don't think there's any doubt there. Sue, Diane, would you agree with that, or Amy?
No, but Joel, I'm glad you brought that up, because it was very clear that it would not be evenly divided out, that everyone gets a benefit. There would be those that had the majority of the benefit. And it goes back to what Graham was saying about, let's talk about Microsoft. You know, we have a small additional benefit possibly by what we did there that was described by Ted, but the majority of that benefit went to West Des Moines. And so it's pretty similar, the way I understood benefit pays for benefit, to that example of the Microsoft expansion.
Something that we're doing right now to help us evaluate this proposal, whether it should be considered at all, is we have looked at our five-year CIP. There are $191 million worth of projects in our five-year CIP related to source treatment and transmission. We have identified what we believe to be the types of projects that maybe everyone should share in equally, and there are those, like rehab of an existing treatment plant, or you know, it's an existing facility, we all benefit from it. And then those that are just specifically related to growth. And we're having some analysis done to help us understand, what does this proposal mean to us? Is it a penny per thousand gallons over the next 40 years, or is it, you know, 25 cents per thousand gallons? And those are the kind of pieces of information that we are going to need to provide to this board to help you make decisions. We're not looking for decisions today at all, though. We're just simply looking for the kind of conversation that we just are having about philosophically, where are we? You know, the point that Andrea made is a great one. Those are the kind of things we want to start thinking about. We want to have those conversations along the way instead of trying to have them all, you know, the last week before we decide. So that's really our goal here today.
About the forthcoming meeting, what is the outcome of this meeting? We've talked about you know, we're bringing them up to date, but is there an outcome that we're expecting from this meeting?
You know, Graham, I would say the outcome is that the regional partners are up to date on where the discussions are, and they understand that we're not done and that we're going to need to continue to meet and bring forward an updated framework, an updated term sheet, if you will, at the end of the first quarter or something like that. It's a status.
And Graham, to add to that, because we are going into legislative session, I'm glad to see that Jen is still on. You know, we finally have clarity in that we believe the word water regarding regional facilities would need to be added to the 28F. So we had talked about, we thought it was good timing to make all of the customers aware of that. So should we find a champion that would agree to adding water to the 28F, it doesn't come as a surprise to an Altoona or an Ankeny or a Norwalk that they know exactly why. So that is another component, I think, as far as outcome. And then I heard Christina say, you know, we want to ask them at the end to be patient. You know, it's not that you're not going to see all of the details, but we are trying to give something to our boards that they can react to, you know, affirmatively, or know that this isn't going to work.
I mean, I think it's, we've talked about this as a board. Ted, and you and I have talked about it. I mean, we keep pushing off the due date on this, and at Des Moines Water Works peril. I mean, we have a lot of capital improvement projects and others that have been pushed down the track because these discussions are going on. And it makes me nervous when West Des Moines, as Sue just said, that the outcome of the meeting is be patient, because I continue to believe that that is West Des Moines' game, is to be patient and to push this down the track farther. And I'm curious to know, and I don't know if any of us have the answer, but I think at some point we're going to have to be the entity that says this is the drop dead date on moving forward with regionalization. Because we can't be having this discussion a year from now. We can't, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, Graham. And I think everybody understands that. And the patience is not for a long period of time. I think we're talking about January.
January for what?
To give the framework so that people understand to be done.
And so
I want to be careful with that. I wouldn't say January, but I would certainly say wrap it up by first quarter.
Yeah, I would be more comfortable with that, Sue. And I think that just with the holidays, Diane, and everything else that's going on.
Yeah, but it's not a long period of time. I think.
Is that an updated term sheet, or
yes.
What are we? Thank you.
And I think, you know, if, you know, the first quarter is when that updated term sheet is going to be released, that term sheet needs to have a clock attached to it that is ticking when that term sheet gets done. And I'm not here to say that, you know, that's June 30th and you're either in or out. Maybe it is, but
Maybe it is,
right? But yeah. We are going to have to be the drivers of that.
Yeah, I agree. Sue, you're muted.
For the rest of the board, I want the
everybody
board to
feels
know,
the pressure.
Yeah, Ted has brought up numerous times, we cannot afford to wait much longer. We have a lot of infrastructure and things that we need to be making decisions on.
We're pushing that, but Graham, I am going to be honest and share your nervousness that okay, we said December 1. Well, we got to December 1 and that turned into, well, we'll give an update. And now we're saying first quarter. And if we get to the end of the first quarter and, you know, well, that's going to be update number 2. I'm going to be incredibly uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because Jen and I just talked this week, well, within the last week about our strategic planning process. And we are going to move the launch of that to the beginning of second quarter because we want to have this done so that we aren't strategic planning while we're trying to decide whether there's going to be a region or not. And these things have to fall together. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for us to do a strategic planning process while we're still trying to decide if we're going to be a region or not.
Right.
And so there are, not only are there capital needs, but there are strategic planning needs. There are all sorts of needs that are contingent on this process coming to conclusion. And I think we need a commitment from our partners to move this forward during the first quarter, because we know that some of those folks travel for the winter. I think that Jody has already said, hey, you know, my wife will kill me, but I'll be here via Zoom from wherever he's going. I think they're making that kind of commitment. I think we have to push it.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. The problem the thing to remember is, no one else around the negotiating table faces the same issues that we do. And so no one else feels the pressure that we do. And so just to restate, we are going to have to drive hard on that.
Yeah, I agree. There was one other item on the agenda. It was basically the population-weighted voting versus demand-weighted voting. And the only thing I wanted to say about that was that as we have talked through so many of these other questions, it has become clear that the funding for capital needs to be based on demand or consumption rather than population. And
say that again. Say, I don't understand. I don't follow you.
The funding, if we're going to pay for expansion of facilities, or we're going to pay for upgrading of facilities, existing facilities, if we're going to pay, millions of dollars. And let me just use an example. Let's say that we need to update the filters at the Fluor Drive treatment plant, and that's going to cost us $20 million. I believe that that needs to be shared by the community based on usage, not based on population. I think that.
Are you talking about who pays for it?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
So capital projects, the cost needs to be shared based on use rather than population. So whoever uses the most water pays the most cost for capital projects. I think that that is, maybe it's not clear. Let me say it this way, Graham. I think that makes the most sense. And I'm not talking about weighted voting yet. I'm talking about paying for capital projects. So, you know, right now when we do a capital project at the Fluor Drive plant, we just roll it into the rates and everybody pays equally through their rates for capital investments at Fluor Drive. When this new entity comes along, I anticipate that's the same way it's going to happen. And I believe that's how it should happen. If we're going to expand capacity, expansion of capacity has to be paid for based on anticipated demand rather than anticipated population, in my opinion. So capital funding is going to be based on usage or demand as opposed to population.
But that's not a governance question. That's how we pay.
No,
that's exactly right.
That's why you're confusing me, because you're talking about weighted voting, and yep. I don't see where that has anything to do with how the board is structured.
Well, that's my question, Graham. That's you're jumping forward to the question already, and maybe I laid it out in a confusing way, but so much of what we're going to do is going to be funded and paid for and addressed based on demand and usage. Does that inform our discussion on weighted voting at all? Or do we still, is voting completely different and it should be based on population when these other things are based on usage and demand? That's the only, I just wanted to share that. And if there's discussion, great. It's not, again, it's not a decision point. We don't need to make a decision. But as we've been working through this over the recent weeks since we talked about governance and weighted voting, that occurred to me, and I just wanted to bring it to the board for your information.
Do I understand this right? It seems the presumption of your question is that it strengthens the suburbs' argument for demand-weighted voting, the fact that facilities are paid for by demand. Right, and that's kind of what we're getting at here is they're going to use that argument. How much are we, and to what extent are we willing to fight back against that argument? That's kind of what we're facing.
I think that will definitely be a prong of their argument, is that we're paying for everything based on usage and we're voting on everything based on population.
Right.
And WRA does everything based on usage, not based on population, although I think they seat board members per 100,000, and when they weight votes, I need to look and see how that's weighted. And as much as anything, I just wanted that to be an awareness thing for the board, that there's still concern over that. And I understand that we serve people. We don't serve sprinkler heads. People are our customers, sprinkler heads are not, but there's still interest in that out there.
I'm just going to say, I think that those are separate issues. I mean, the payment for, you know, building, you know, a new production capacity because Waukee is going to have a whole bunch of a new user out there, that's something that we should set up in the, you know, the agreement is how these things are paid for. Mm-hmm. That does not impact how the board representation or how voting is handled. Those are two separate issues.
We agree. We don't want them to say, well, we're using it there, so we have to use it here. We agree.
Yeah. I mean, I feel very strongly that board representation has to be tied to population and not use.
Fair enough. That's the kind of feedback we're looking for. Well, those were the two topics that I wanted to share today that I thought were important to get to make the board aware of, educate you on kind of what's going on, and get your feedback. I think we've accomplished those three things. Any other comments or questions for customer relations related items today?
No, but I really appreciate the gentleman coming to our session and jumping in on the previous session. Maybe Amy could keep us informed as we move ahead, because that was really the purpose of the customer relations committee, I think. You know, making sure that we're taking care of our customers. Maybe Amy can continue to keep us informed at our various meetings how we're doing on this new system.
And thank you, Amy, for following up with him and having that conversation with him. I had phones going off in the background and a lot of things, so I apologize that I was kind of brief when I asked you to share your information, but I appreciate you jumping in and working with him.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was happy to do it, frankly. And Laura, I don't know if you've seen my chat, but Laura has already spoken with him and she's reported back that he gave her some additional suggestions that we'll work with our partners tomorrow to see if we can implement. So, you know, we are making adjustments literally by the hour. And it's, you know, thanks to good feedback from customers like that.
Yeah, this is Diane. I will say that I have been involved in several new customer information system rollouts, and it makes difference whether it's public or private. Everybody uses the same vendors, and the vendors understand that and have input into how to do rollout and what kind of what you can do ahead of time to test and those kinds of things. So I know that you have, it's a lot, and you're going to run into glitches because you're working with legacy systems and going over to new systems, and you never know which thing is going to not work correctly, but it needs to be done. And I feel like we're in the best hands possible with you doing it, Amy.
Thank you.
But the fact that we can, you know, I also was thankful that he found us and was able to come on our call and talk about that, because it does get frustrating for people.
I it's a gargantuan undertaking, and I do want to point out that Amy and her team specifically chose the Thanksgiving holiday weekend for this launch so that we would have the 4 days with the office closed and could do all the data conversion. And the core team has been here throughout the holiday weekend preparing for this to make it as positive as it could be. And you know, you hear horror stories about these launches where communities aren't even able to send bills and things just crash and burn. And you know, we're hopeful that none of those things happen. We think we're frankly past those kind of hurdles because of the testing and the analysis that Amy and her team have done throughout. But we anticipated there would be challenges. This would be a tough week, and it has not disappointed. So it's only Tuesday. I've talked to several people, and there is some frustration. There's challenge. There's a little heartache, but there's also enormous commitment and excitement about the fact that we're finally here and we're launching and it's working. And when the customers do, the queue is long. Customers are having trouble getting in, but when they're getting in, we're solving their problems and we're getting them on their way. So we're optimistic, and I look forward to hearing updates from Amy as we move forward.
Yeah, and these new systems are so exciting in their capabilities and functionality. So I think once you get through this period, should make things easier for everybody.
That's the truth. And, you know, if I could just jump in and say I appreciate this board support and also Ted and Peggy's support, because this project has definitely taken longer to launch than any of us wanted. But there has been great commitment by all of you as well, financially and you know, just general support. So I'm very pleased with how it's gone, to be honest. We have hit some bumps, but it's nothing that we can't figure out. So
Sue, that was the extent of my comments.
Ted, you did a nice job in benefit pays for benefit. And I don't think anyone could be offended that, I mean, this is what we wanted to make sure the board was aware of and have a common understanding conceptually of what was counter-proposed. So, all right, with that, thank you everyone for your time. We're right at 5. So if there are no other questions, we'll take a motion to adjourn. Graham gave us a thumb up. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye. Good week.